Okay. We already designated this week's topic last week. And the truth is that initially I felt that I don't know if I should be talking about this. You have to be on a certain level to be able to preach about this. But then I realized that the truth is that that's an arrogant thought, because it's kind of implying that I am qualified to speak about everything else I speak about. Just here, all of a sudden, I have a problem. What's my justification for speaking at all, especially speaking to people older than me? I'm conveying the version of Judaism that I got from my Rebbeim. That's all. So, really, the way I want to present what we're going to do tonight is we're going to learn together the subject. I'm not going to tell people, you know, how they should relate to this subject. We're going to learn together the sources. That's what we're doing here. And again, the subject, as we introduced it last week, was suffering, Yisurim. Last week was easier because last week we discussed it from a more harsh, insensitive angle, and therefore I didn't have to be, wasn't too hard to get it right. Didn't have to be too delicate. But this week, I want to already discuss, yes, the level where a person is doing what they need to be doing, and all the considerations we discussed last week are not in the picture, and a good person is suffering. How do we approach that, and how do we relate to it? So first of all, we're going to start, I'll just say, Bezos Hashem, this should not be relevant. But even if it's not relevant, which will Bezos Hashem be the case, these points, these principles, are just very important to know anyways. And number two, these are things that I certainly, and it's very difficult for anybody to say to a person who's actually going through something. When a person is going through something, you don't tell them how to approach it, you just offer compassion, that's all. It's important, therefore, to study these things when it isn't relevant, so as to be on the level to be able to handle it should it be relevant. Now, I'm not going to say to fortify ourselves for the eventuality, because we hope that there won't be any such eventuality. But, no, we want to fortify ourselves even for the event that we will never suffer, because it's important for a person to be on the level that he's able to relate to it right, even if it never comes into play. So, I'm going to pick up from where we left off last week, and that was the general approach. I'm going to pick up on where we left off last week, and that is that the first thing to do when a person sees themselves suffering some sort of misfortune, step number one was yifashpesh b'masav, meaning take an account of what you've been doing. Hashem, in His great love for us, will sometimes send a person misfortune in order to alert him. There's something wrong in his life that needs to be fixed. And the greatest tragedy is if you go through all of life without fixing it, and therefore Hashem alerts him. So the first job is to look around. What is it that might be wrong in my life that needs fixing? Okay. Now, again, as we stress, people can go overboard with it and make themselves a little too crazy, trying to unearth who knows what it could be, because the truth is that all of us have hidden faults. But we have to understand that when Hashem is sending a message, as we quoted already from the Chassam Sofer and other authorities, Hashem works with us according to our level. Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Gvor Etruni Al B'Yosef. Hashem is not looking to set us up, He's not looking to trap us, and He's not going to put us through things because of issues that we can't discover and the purposes that we should discover them. So therefore, when we talk about taking stock, we mean, can you come up with things that, through reasonable introspection, you can figure out these things, yes, they require a change. I know that there are certain things that I'm not careful about enough, in whatever area it is, these things require a change. That's step number one. Step number two, again, we're still summing up from last week before we move on. Step number two, when a person has reached the conclusion that he doesn't have what to fix, or he's fixing what needs to be fixed, is, as the Gemara termed, the Itla Bevitl Teira, which we translated in a practical way as it means in general. In general, be mechatek yourself. Take on chizukim. Take on things. Step up your spiritual effort. Sometimes the issue is not a fault, just the issue is that there's more you could be doing with your life. Learning, davening, taking on challenges of midas. Okay. The next step, after you've done this, you already move into the realm of what the Gemara calls Yisurim Shel Ava. Yisurim of love. A strange phrase, and this is what we're going to be studying today. The concept of Yisurim Shel Ava. When Hashem brings suffering upon a person through a difficult time because He loves them. So what's this supposed to mean? So before we get on to what this means and how to understand it, let's again still continue talking halacha. The Gemara goes on about the immense opportunity that suffering provides. Again, we'll discuss it on a more profound level, Bezras Hashem, as we go along. But the Gemara talks about the immense opportunity that suffering provides. Nachman al-Litzlan. But that a person can really earn unbelievable schar through suffering. But there's one condition. And this is really the first thing that we have to say before we get into our whole discussion. And that is lekabel ba'ava. A person has to accept it lovingly. Meaning, not to be resentful about it. A person should be doing whatever he can to alleviate it. And this is where some people find it confusing. Where do you draw the line? No, there's no line to draw. Yes, make all the efforts you can to alleviate it. If a person has a strep throat, being mekabel ba'ava does not mean not to take antibiotics. No, do what you can to alleviate it, but while in as much as you are going through it, accept whatever you are going through with love. Meaning, in other words, in a very simple way, what this means is to be able to turn around and say to Hashem, Hashem, I know you're putting me through this. I know you're doing it for my good and because you love me and because you know better than me what's good for me. And therefore, I accept whatever you bring upon me. Okay, that's in a very basic way. Now, I just want to clear away another potential misunderstanding on this subject, and that is that people ask, how do I know that it's Yisurim Shel Ava? How do I know that it's because Hashem loves me? Maybe it's because of a punishment for the past. Maybe it's because I'm being shown disfavor. So the answer is, well, some will actually address, if it is for a punishment in the past, the truth is that's also a sign of Hashem's love. But what we'll say in any event, that this is a very important principle that the Chumash Avodos puts down with regard to a different subject. But the principle is that when it comes to these things, what its intent is often depends on what you make out of it. Sounds strange, because when we do something to somebody, we have a very specific intent, and the way he takes it doesn't make a difference to what I intended, right? If I give somebody money, and either I wanted to give him a gift, or I wanted to buy me something, or I want to frame him, right? With the police. The way he takes it is not going to change what I actually had in mind. But Hashem doesn't work this way. With Hashem, that could be. Yeah, Hashem could send somebody something somebody's way, fortune or misfortune. And depending on how the person relates to it, it can either be a sign of favor, or you can turn it into disfavor. I'll give an example. Let's say there's a concept, Chorus HaLava says, people have to worry. It's a concept of Hashem paying a person off in this world. So he says that many of the pious would worry when a stroke of good luck comes their way, strikes a good deal, maybe Hashem is paying me off in this world. Scary thought, isn't it? So basically, the Chavis Halvamis' answer is exactly what we said, but I'm going to present it with something about illustrated with an example. A person is a bad guy. Hashem decides he wants to pay him off in this world. So you know what? His time comes to die, and Hashem says, you know what? I'm going to give him another 2 years of life. Pay him off in this world. Okay? Now, in those 2 years, the guy changes and dedicates those 2 years to chesed. Now what happens? The point was to pay him off in this world, and now Lamaisa, what's the point? Pay him off for his good deeds, but now he's accumulated a whole bunch of more good deeds. So the 2 years went by, and now Kiviyachol, Hashem has more to pay back. What will Hashem do? So give him another 10 years to pay him off for those, that chesed. And then the person goes and utilizes those 10 years for chesed. The outsmarting Hashem? The answer is Hashem wants you to. Hashem doesn't mind. If you actually go and turn it into sus, it's fine. It'll turn out retroactively that yes, this person did tshuva, and those added 2 years and then the subsequent 10 years were retroactively a sign of favor. And therefore we're going to say the same thing about Yisurin. Yisurin may initially come as a sign of this favor, chas v'shalom. And again, we're going to assume that that's not usually the case with people who are generally trying to do Hashem's will. But let's assume that it is. In a case where Yisurin come as a sign of this favor, but lamaisa, the person relates to it right, the Yisurin turn into a new page in his life, and now he is moving them, he's shifting them into the realm of favor. So therefore we have to realize that, oh, there's no room to worry about, but how do I know? By relating to it right, you can turn it to your advantage, you can turn it into closeness between yourself and Hashem. We stress, how can we say, V'ahavta es Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha, b'chol nafshecha, v'chol me'oidecha. You should love Hashem with all your heart, with all your soul, not our subject now, and according to one interpretation of Chazal, with every measure, b'chol me'oidecha, with all of your measures, meaning any measure that Hashem deals you. In other words, our love of Hashem is supposed to be so intense that when something comes up, when the boat is rocked, we say, Hashem, I know that you control everything, you're doing this, and this is not going to shake my love for you. On the contrary, you're challenging me. And yes, I love you despite what's happening. If you want to give a bit of an extreme example of this, Shimshon Pinkus would tell the story of Rahman al-Islam, one of the Jews who was fleeing the Inquisition. Well, he left Spain at the expulsion, the time of the expulsion. And the people leaving Spain at that time, the exiles, okay, some of them got settled in other places, other people went through many years of travails, bouncing around from place to place, no shelter. So there was a fellow who was bouncing around from place to place with his family, never able to settle anywhere. And Rahman al-Islam, they were being set upon by illness and all kinds of other misfortunes. He lost his wife, he lost his children. He was on a boat, traveling somewhere, when he lost his last child. This was a person who had been a rich man in Spain, large family, beautiful family. Now, he's a poor, destitute man, alone in the world, doesn't belong anywhere, has no home, he's on a ship's deck and just lost his last family member. And Shimshon Pinkus said how he stood on the deck and he cried out, Hashem, he said, Hashem, you took everything from me, but there's one thing that you can never take from me, and that is you. This is basically the idea. V'ahavta b'chol me'oidecha. At the end of the day, whatever happens is against such a big backdrop of love that I simply take it as a challenge from Hashem. Sometimes those challenges are expensive, but at the end of the day, when we're talking in terms of this world, you think, once I lose all my family members, well, that's it. It's the ultimate. You know, what love can be left after that? When we're talking in the big billion-year picture, how Hashem has his special place for each of the children, and his special place for the wife, and they're all going to be rejoined, and this whole issue is just a fleeting, passing experience, which is just a preparation for eternity, which is to come, for the good times ahead. It's a different feeling. Now, of course, we're talking about a very high madrega, but I'm just illustrating the concept. Okay. So now let's actually move on. Lemaisa. So we keep on talking about how this can be an expression of Hashem's love. But how? So here, we're going to learn together, this is really what we're going to be doing now, we're going to learn together what the Kadmonim have to say about this. So again, basically the structure of this shir is not a shir that I built, we're going to go through point by point studying what the different Mefarshim and Kadmonim say on this subject, which is really how they explain the concept, the phenomenon of Yisurim Shel Ahava. And this is explained in a few ways. We're going to try to explain all the different things. So first of all, we have to preface this by saying the Chayyus Halvavis gives his own explanation of why it would be that a righteous person would suffer, that a good person would be put through hard times. And he prefaces it by saying that at the end of the day, the true answer to the question is that Hashem is so much bigger than us and knows so much better than us what's good for us, and we don't need to know the answer. And whatever profound understandings we will have might be a drop in the bucket to the true profundity and to the true benefit of what these things are meant to be. Yet, he says, we are going to discuss understandings that we can relate to on our level. And that's where we'll begin our discussion. Really, we're starting now. So point number one. I'm going to go through points. Point number one. Rashi, Marsha, explain that the concept of Yisurim Shel Ahava means that a person is deemed righteous enough to atone for his generation. There are certain laws of spirituality which we'll understand better when we get to the next world. But Kolahoyim HaKadosh Baruch Hu Vatron Hu Yivatron Lohoyim, Hashem does not overlook it. Averis cannot be ignored. This is a profound subject. It's not our subject right now. Why couldn't Hashem work it otherwise? Why couldn't He just let things go? No. His purpose was to grant us the ultimate joy someone could ever experience, and this could not work if He would overlook others, if He would let them go. So therefore, we're just going to work with that as an axiom now. Maybe it'll be a discussion for another shir. Profound subject, but right now that's an axiom. Averis cannot be overlooked. Now this is true on the personal level, it's also true on the level of the generation. Meaning, there is a concept, we'll call it a spiritual law of nature, that a generation sins, many people in a generation sin, and this generation is now deserving of punishment, which could manifest as severe misfortunes, very sweeping misfortunes. We've seen such things. Sometimes you can have a person who steps up and volunteers, either literally, we've seen such things in the Gemara, or figuratively, meaning Hashem decides this person is a person who would volunteer. Today there's no nevuah, and we also don't have the open channels of communication that the Meiraim have. But sometimes a person would volunteer to say, you know what, I want to spare Klal Yisrael suffering. And therefore, this person volunteers to take the suffering upon himself. The greater the person, the more he can atone. And this actually is one of the biggest forms of chesed a person can do with Klal Yisrael. When a person does this, a person goes through suffering. So the Ben Ish Chai says that Hashem, when He's bringing suffering upon a person to atone for others, Hashem chooses His candidates carefully. He chooses those who would accept if they were offered the choice. Meaning, He chooses those people who He knows are on the level, that if He were to appear to them, if Hashem were to appear to the person and say, would you be willing to suffer such and such to atone for your generation and to save them this gzera, that gzera, etc., the person would say yes. Hashem might bring suffering upon that person for this purpose without telling the person about it. And the Ben Ish Chai adds a point to this. He says that when he's choosing his candidates for this purpose, he chooses those people who are capable of accepting it, what we call b'sever panim yafos, meaning of accepting it, so to speak, happily, so as not to create a Chilul Hashem. When a person goes through an experience and is busy whining, why did this happen to me? Why me? Why did Hashem do this? That could chas v'shalom create a Chilul Hashem, like we discussed last week. Right? Hashem gets, so to speak, bad publicity. When a person is, Hashem will often choose a person who is capable of accepting it pleasantly, and on the contrary, he serves it as an example for others to how to relate to the Yisurim. That's what Hashem is choosing as the candidates, the volunteer, if we'll call it that, to take this sublime task. And this person goes to Olam Haba as one of the greatest Balei Chesed of the generation. This is a person, can you imagine what the schar would be for a person who can actually prevent the Holocaust? That's what these people are doing. We have no idea what other such gzeiros could come. That's what these people are doing. And therefore, for a person who is chosen for this task, is actually being put in a very elite status that only a select few qualify for. And this is to be viewed as a major sublime mission, as a privilege. And now again, the Chovetz Chovetz adds that you can take this to another level also. This person, by accepting it pleasantly, by accepting it willingly, by accepting it lovingly, provides a lesson for others for how to relate to Yisroel. And in this sense, the Chovetz Chovetz says he's like a Rebbe for others. He's a teacher. Same way as you can have a person who inspires others through shiurim given to thousands of people. Sometimes we've seen such cases. A person through his suffering and through the way he responds to his suffering inspires others, teaches others, serves them as an example of others, for others, of how to relate to this. And this person is put in the category of Mezakeh Aravim, a teacher, a Rebbe, a person who's teaching the Derech Hashem to the public. This we'll call approach number one. And then we're going through point by point different approaches and how to understand the concept, and in how to be able to sense, to be able to sense when chas v'shalom a person is going through suffering, to be able to actually sense closeness, love that's being expressed through it.
Are there any exceptions to that rule?
To?
Exceptions to the rule that when you're suffering it's because of something you did?
Absolutely, that's what we'll see now. And actually what we were just saying now is not an example of necessarily suffering because of something you did, but suffering because of things that Klal Yisrael did. But now we'll see that yes, there's a concept. Let's see. That's point number one. Approach number two. And this basically is exactly what you just asked. Concept of Yisurim Shel Ava that has absolutely nothing to do with sin of any form. What is it? So, once again, we go back to the axiom, because without this, the whole discussion doesn't begin. We go back to the axiom that we are here in this world in order to reach our maximum potential, in order to dedicate ourselves to Hashem in the fullest way. That's what our purpose of existence in this world is. Now, let's take a very theoretical case. What happens if a person reaches perfection? I don't know. Very theoretical. I don't know if there's such a thing. What if a person reaches perfection? Came perfect. That's it. He achieved his purpose in this world. Now what? Ready to die. There's nothing left to do in this world. So, the Kadmonim tell us that actually Yisurim are often a form of Hashem offering a person higher levels to reach. Hashem says, this person is maximizing himself, and I want to offer him higher levels to reach. How? Through continuing. Right? He has such a good attitude. He's so dedicated to Hashem. To continue to show that same dedication through suffering. In other words, Hashem is putting him into the deep water. Up till now he was riding with training wheels, Hashem is taking off the training wheels. Can you continue doing what you're doing, but now on a much higher level? Now on the level of being able to maintain those same feelings, to maintain that same level of dedication, to maintain that same commitment through the suffering. Now, this is not just a test. This is not just a test. In a general way, we could call this a test. But what's the concept of a test in spirituality? It's not just a test. Well, let's see if you did it. If you did it, you're the same old guy. Just now you have a passing mark. No. I think we've mentioned in the past that the word Nisayon is from the word Nes. Nes means a banner. No miracle, but Nes also means a banner. I always say, Shmaneser, his son Nes, the Kavitzka, the Yisayin, who raised a banner to gather in the Golias. Nes means a banner. In other words, an Yisayin, really, essentially what an Yisayin is, Hashem is giving you a banner, a special banner that you can raise aloft, that you can hold up as your sign of excellence. What's a banner? Right? Any country's banner. What's a banner is your symbol. So Hashem says, this is something to gain a new identity by. Hashem brings a person to Nisayon. Let's step away from the issue of suffering per se for a minute. But Hashem sends a person to Nisayon. Right? Back in the olden days, person is tempted with Chilul Shabbos in order to be able to bring bread home. A Nisayon. Hashem is presenting him a banner, meaning by facing this Nisayon, you can earn a new identity. This might be your identity for eternity. The person who? XYZ. The person who did this. Right? You might be gaining for yourself a title, a prestige for all of eternity. That's actually what a Nisayon is. People don't know which is the Nisayon of their lifetime. Sometimes a person might be sent into this world and given a whole life, all leading up to one specific Nisayon, which is really his mark of distinction for all of eternity. Right? A person might not even notice it when he's actually facing it. Right? A person is in a desperate situation. The rent is due. He doesn't have the money. And now he suddenly has an opportunity to pull a little bit of funny business and make exactly enough money for the rent. And he's very pressured. He's tempted. This is a Nisayon. Yes, it's a test, but it's also a banner. Who knows if all of your life experience was actually meant to build up to this point, where you can go down in eternity, you can walk through Shamayim with the distinction that you're the person who got thrown out of his apartment and did not cheat. It could be that this is the purpose that was being mapped out for you in the 5,700 years prior to your existence. And therefore, failing in Nisayon is not just an issue of, alright, you win some, you lose some. You might be losing out on what was meant to be your sign of distinction for all of eternity. Whatever it is, back to Yisurin. Yisurin is often an issue of Hashem telling a person, I am now introducing you to a whole new level of avodah, which you would have never gotten to on your own, because you basically maximized everything you were going to be doing in life. Now, I am providing you with a whole new level of avodah. Right? Remember Nintendo games? That's from my time. The people earlier than me remember Pac-Man, the people later than me don't know what Nintendo is anymore. It's already something that you find in antique stores. But how does any basic computer game work? The way any basic computer game works is the first level is easy. Right? You pass that level, gets more difficult. You pass that level, even more difficult. If you make it to the 8th, 9th level, it's extremely difficult. A person might say, what do I need this for? Keep it at the first level all the time. There's no point. There's no challenge. The whole point is getting to the next level and facing the thrill of seeing whether I can do it. Now here it's hard to use the word thrill. It's hard to use the word thrill. But the Mesillas Yesharim says that when a person is truly dedicated to Hashem, he wants to be able to show his dedication in more challenging situations. He says it's like a general who wants to go down in the general's hall of fame. He's not going to go down in the general's hall of fame by just in general maintaining security. There's a serious threat, or if there's a serious battle, now is his chance to earn distinction. When a person really feels that loyalty to Hashem, he's looking for the opportunities to prove his greatness, to prove his dedication through the more challenging situations. And therefore the Goyim says, that's why this is called Yisurim Shel Ahava, because Hashem is granting a person an opportunity to simply fly to higher levels not of his own initiative. And growth, in general, in spirituality is not a simple thing. Here, right? Yeah, it's a program that requires a lot of initiation and planning and effort, etc. Here, Hashem is offering you a program that you don't have to plan. Interesting take. Yeah, I just want to wait. At the end, I'll take questions. Okay, but here, Hashem is offering a program that you don't have to plan. You just have to work with it. Take the ball and run with it. The Goyim said, also Paulus says, that's the Ava. The Ava is the fact that he's introducing you to a level free of charge. You don't have to work to get it. Okay, this is certainly an interesting approach, but this is something to think about. Now, one more point to add to this concept is that, well, two more points. The Mabit says that this is a chesed of Hashem in another sense. When a person goes through this world with unutilized potential, it's a waste. It's a waste for a person to have gone through this world with potential to have achieved more than he actually did. And therefore, when Hashem provides him with the opportunities to bring his potential to the next level, it's a big chesed, to be viewed as a chesed, as an expression of Hashem's love. So yes, when a person is going through a difficult time, if a person can manage to maintain the presence of mind, which again, you might not relate to that way initially, right? Don't think that initially a person is thrown. But if a person settles and analyzes the situation, he's able to relate to it. In this way, he can actually sense Hashem expressing his love through what he's putting him through by saying, I believe in you. I know that you can reach much higher levels than you have, and therefore I'm providing you with the opportunity. Next point. Sometimes suffering can serve to perfect the person. Meaning, simply in the spiritual sense, in a practical spiritual sense, meaning not just rising into higher levels in an abstract way, but actually providing for new avenues of growth. I'll give an example. My grandmother was very active in the community in Brooklyn, and she knew a person who was an activist, a Bikur Chaylim activist. Right, you know, the people who are involved with referrals and helping sick people, etc. He was a big medical activist. Baal Chesed. And this person took very ill. Now he needed all the Chesed that he used to provide. So, I don't remember if it was my grandmother who was actually visiting him, or if she said that others had visited him, but whatever it is, someone visiting him said to him, sometimes, you know, people complain for the person. The other person is not complaining. Others will complain for them. Why? I don't understand why Hashem should do this to a person like you, whose whole life has been dedicated to helping people in this situation. This person responded, he said, exactly the opposite. I thank Hashem for doing this to me, because now I'll be able to do my job better. Meaning, in other words, what he was saying is, helping people without ever having actually experienced it might be done on a mediocre level. I might appreciate the chesed that I'm doing, but I still might not truly appreciate the urgency. I might not, when I get out of bed at 3 in the morning because someone called me, I might not jump out of bed energetically enough because I never actually experienced it. Now that I've been there, now that I've experienced all the different types of help that I provide, I can much better appreciate the need, the urgency. I'll be able to do my job now on a whole different level. For this person, the Yisurim were a very great benefit, and he was able to acknowledge it too. In another way, and this is a bit rougher, but this is something that the Kadmonim say, the Ran and the Shlom. Say that suffering serves to loosen a person's attachment to Olam Hazeh. To loosen a person's attachment to Olam Hazeh. A person is very, very entrenched in Olam Hazeh. Going through suffering, again, all these things are only relevant if the person is conscientious. And going through these things with a working mind, with a conscientious approach. But he says it has the potential of causing a person to lose his obsession is a strong word, but his infatuation, his excitement to Olam Hazeh, because he's already seen the futility of Olam Hazeh. I'll give an example. The Satmar Rebbe, when he came to Eretz Yisrael, one of the times he came to Eretz Yisrael, he was greeted with Mamish, a royal, they laid down the red carpet that, you know, the newcomer know how to do it. Mamish got a royal welcome with thousands of people, etc., a whole couple of spanim, royal reception. One of the people, one of the chassidim who was close with him, apparently was a bit of a chutzpahdik guy, apparently couldn't contain himself, and he asked the Rebbe, he said, "No, is the Rebbe enjoying all the kavod?" I don't know how he did that, but he did it. So the Rebbe smiled and he said, "You know something? I was in Auschwitz. Went through the worst horrors of the Second World War." He said, "I was in Auschwitz. In Auschwitz, I went to what Olam Hazeh is. This is that same Olam Hazeh." Meaning, let's understand what he's saying here. He didn't mean to say he's suffering the same way he suffered in Auschwitz. That's not what he meant to say. What he meant to say is, in Auschwitz, I gained such a lack of appreciation for Olam Hazeh, meaning it's just learned how nothing it is, that all this just doesn't mean anything to me. It's the same Olam Hazeh. Everything that I had beforehand, I lost in an instant. Olam Hazeh is just so nothing that this really means nothing to me. So this is something, when a person relates to it in this way, and a person says, what am I investing my kliches in Olam Hazeh for? Look how transient it is. Look how vulnerable I am. Is this where it's worth investing my efforts? That can also raise a person to a whole different level. Then, people talk, it can go through suffering. When a person is not married to Olam Hazeh, a person can go through suffering with indifference. Again, we're talking about big madrigas here. Of course, it's all relative. So, like for example, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Rayatz, the father-in-law of the last one, the one who actually founded Lubavitch in the United States. So he was known for his his frictions with the communists. He was in and out of jail, and he went a lot of suffering because he basically spearheaded open, overt Hasidism right in the face of the communists. Nothing, you know. Ultimately, he went underground, but as long as he was in Russia, it was still overground. And when he was arrested, he decided that, I don't know what his cheshbon was, but that it's very important that he doesn't show them any sign of weakness. And therefore, when he was led into the interrogation room, he said, as they let him in, interrogation rooms of the KGB weren't pleasant places. They let him in, the commissar, whoever it is, was sitting there at the table, and he said in a very gruff voice, he said, "When I enter a room, I expect everybody to rise." This is what he said to his captives. So it happened to be Jewish officials. So one of the guards looked at him and said, "Do you know where you are?" So he said, "Yes, I do know where I am. When we walked through the door, I noticed that there's no mezuzah. There's only one type of room that doesn't have a mezuzah. So I know where I am." But, okay, and this is a person who's able to relate indifferently to Olam Hazeh. Okay, so here obviously we're talking about, this is more just for the purpose of the story than to actually say that this is the way we should relate to it. But the point is that when a person goes through these things with an open mind, a person can gain a sense of detachment from Olam Hazeh, of losing his the glamour, that sense of being married to Olam Hazeh, and therefore he doesn't panic over issues pertaining to Olam Hazeh, nor does he get overly excited about issues pertaining to Olam Hazeh. Therefore, the Shla says, for example, he cites a famous story of Hillel, where Hillel was once coming back from out of town, and they heard terrible screaming coming from the town. And Hillel said, I'm sure that that screaming is not coming from my house. Because he was kind of implying that he was relying on his righteousness. So the Shla asks, what do you mean? How could he say that? We know that righteous people were put through serious suffering. So even if he's relying on his righteousness, how could he say, I'm confident that that screaming is not coming from my house? So the Shla says something very profound. He says, Hillel wasn't saying that I'm confident that there would be no suffering in my house. He's saying desperate screaming would never come from my house. I raised my family with the approach and with the attitude and ingrained with the feelings that are on such a level that we'd never hear that sort of screaming. No matter what was going on, it was the screaming that said it doesn't make sense. Not the prospect of maybe something, some misfortune befell his home. But that sort of screaming would never be coming from my home. Because we don't live that way. Okay, now I want to finish with one last point. And this is the Ramchal, a very, very profound point, which is a shame to have to bring up at the end, but we'll do so anyways briefly. The Ramchal says as follows, and this is also something that if we can really feel this, or not us, but in the theoretical situation where a person is going through something, and a person can really feel this, a person can reach a sublime level of consciousness. Ramchal says as follows, the truth is that all the galus, all the imperfection of this world, is a manifestation of what we call Hastaras Panim. Hashem is kevyochol concealed. But it's more than that. It's not just that Hashem is concealed. It's that the Shekhinah itself kevyochol is in the dirt. Is in the dirt. Hashem's glory is not apparent. Hashem's glory is downtrodden. All imperfection of the world highlights that. All the problems in the world highlights that. All the sins certainly. And in addition, the suffering of righteous people highlights that. The suffering of righteous people is certainly a conflict with Hashem's honor. Because Hashem's glory mandates that the righteous should be in the greatest of situations. But the Ramchal says, the whole essence of this world, the whole purpose of all the Hester upon him in this world, is because everything is leading up to a revelation of the greatest degree. And therefore, the darker it is beforehand, the more the light can be appreciated afterwards. Right? You appreciate light in as much as it's contrasted with dark. And therefore, he says, all of the imperfection, all of the Hester Panim in this world, is all for the purpose of enhancing the ultimate revelation. The ultimate revelation of Hashem's glory. The ultimate Gilui Kvod Shamayim. Now, again, since one of the instances of Hester Panim, of Hashem's glory being concealed, is a righteous person suffering, what's actually going on is Hashem is telling this righteous person, are you willing to partner with me in order to lead up to that ultimate revelation? Any suffering that a Jew goes through in this world is part of that conflict. It's part of the conflict with Kvod Shamayim. And we're understanding that ultimately, all of the imperfection in this world is orchestrated deliberately in order to bring out even more the ultimate revelation. And therefore, it's as though these people were actually partners in the ultimate revelation. A person is partnering with Hashem Kiviyachol in the ultimate Gilui Kvod Shamayim, in the whole purpose of the world. This is a role that can't be described in terms of greatness. This is something that really requires elaboration, deserves elaboration, but the time has run out, and now we'll take questions. You were going to ask something.
Yeah. In this world, you see, some people seem to be, or claim to be, things are very easy for them. Do we have to assume then that based on what you said, that's, let's say, you know, not necessarily a good thing, it's a bad thing. We have to assume that necessarily someone who looks like a very good year, and very good man, and well...
But the poor guy is not suffering.
So you're asking
a good question. You're asking, after everything we've just been describing, If a person has a good life, is that to be taken as a sign of displeasure? And the answer is no. Suffering can be a sign of favor, and a good life can be a sign of favor, and both depend on how the person takes it. Now here we come to something very, very deep, which we can't really understand. Rav Dessler says that, right, the Gemara says that on the one hand, Moshe Rabbeinu asked to understand Hashem's ways. And we find two differing answers in the Gemara. Some say that Hashem gave him an explanation of why the righteous suffer. Right? That's what Moshe asked. Why do the righteous suffer? Some say that Hashem gave him an explanation, and others say that no, Hashem didn't give an explanation. He just said, it's not understandable at all. It's one of those things about this world that you just can't understand. So Rav Dessler says that there are really two levels. There is a neshama whose function in this world, like we said before, sometimes suffering is not an issue and not a consequence of Avera at all. Not a consequence of Avera at all. It's simply that that's what this person's function in life was, to show how you serve Hashem through suffering. This was his unique role in bringing out Koed Shemayim. This is the role that was mapped out to him over the last 5,700 years before he appeared on the scene. And this is his place in Koed Shemayim. For others, their place in Koed Shemayim is through showing how a person can serve Hashem properly through a comfortable life. Why should one get one role and one get the other role? This is already the level of Dessel says we're talking about things that originate from the highest of places, and that can't be understood. What we can understand is the lower level things, meaning the issues that we were discussing now, why it might happen to a person, etc., etc. But at the end of the day, why one person's role in Gilui Koed Shemayim was slated as serving Hashem through suffering, and the other person's was serving Hashem through happiness, it's beyond us. It's beyond us. What we will say, though, is that when a person really utilizes the challenge of suffering, he can come to live a life of joy. I won't say a life of comfort, but a life of joy in that suffering, such that we don't know who's actually feeling more fulfillment in his life. Sometimes, a person might say, in retrospect, I don't know if I would trade in this life. Sometimes. Right? Because at the end of the day, the fulfillment that he got from reading the challenge and from living all the things that we saw here, his life was a happy life. Not a comfortable life, but a happy life. But why one is chosen over the other, that's one of those things that we just don't know. But certainly, we should not say, if a person has everything good, we have to suspect him. Yeah?
Concept sounds like a sacrifice. And you know from the Akedah that wasn't what Hashem really wanted.
In that case, it wasn't. In that case, it wasn't. But the truth is, right? You remember the Gemara about Chana and her sons? Right? She Mamish went and said exactly that. Go, she told her last son was being killed, go and tell Hashem that he just built one Mizbeach and he never actually ended up sacrificing anyone on it. I built 7 Mizbeachas and sacrificed all 7 of my sons. And what does the Gemara tell us afterwards? She threw herself off the roof and the Baskol came down and said, how did she die? So that's right. Sometimes it's not meant to actually carry out. Sometimes it is. Jews have sacrificed their lives throughout the generations, and Jews have undergone suffering willingly for Hashem's sake.
Isn't that story? Isn't that be a negative thing for Jews to jump off through? From her point of view, doesn't that just sound like?
Presumably, the pshat there is that she understood that she didn't really have. She was slated for the same thing, in which case it was actually motive. Anybody else? Okay.